I think you'll all agree, Cobbett Slattery is short adequately where the Socialist Party of Britain stands. And I would suggest 5 minutes while you think over what he said and ask questions later.
Well, we answer the condition, obviously. We have to broadcast our reaction to it. We are reacting. We're saying, look, we have listened to television, listened to radio, read the papers, and we're sick of it. We don't believe it. Why don't we believe it? I don't believe it. Not because the Socialist Party has told me so. Not because the Socialist Party has forbidden me to believe it. That's not good enough. I don't believe that conditioning because I know it's rubbish. It doesn't have any relation to what really goes on, which I can see with my eyes and hear with my ears. Now, I think the way in which conditioning will end, and I agree with you that it's a long way from actually ending, obviously, as far as capitalist conditioning is concerned, but it's happening. The way it happens is that conditioning contradicts itself. Just to give you a couple of examples, people are taught when they're very young, but when they grow up, they must have a job. You ask the children in school, what do you want to do when you grow up? And they say, you could be an engine driver or whatever. Many children say, I want to be an engine driver. Just a popular job. But when you grow up and you find that capitalist industry only needs so many engine drivers, and that having got their engine drivers, they're going to squeeze them dry for lifetime. They don't want to switch and have different people having a chance or anything like that. They get their engine drivers and that's it. The rest can forget it. That expectation is destroyed. That conditioning is destroyed, and so there's a contradiction. People are taught in school to expect happiness, satisfaction, fulfillment from certain things in life, from having a job, from getting married, from having children, from getting a family, a car, from borrowing money in order to buy some small luxury and then trying to struggle to pay it back. We're taught all of these things. And when you grow up, it contradicts. The conditioning itself contradicts. On the television, 1 minute you see a picture of people starving to death. The very next minute, you see a picture of food mountains. Now, I know we're not yet on the verge of starving to death, but it still figures up here because you think, right, that could be me tomorrow. And the food mountains are still there. And no conditioning can hide that fact. It's true, the newscasters try to pass it over and they say, well, we've got a mountain, we've got a butter mountain and a wine lake, and you can't afford any wine this week, but never mind, the wine lake is going to be poured in the sea. It's all very sensible. But they can't hide that fact because people are still going to respond to contradictions. So obviously, I'm not just being optimistic and saying we walk out of this room, everybody's going to flock in and support us. I know it's a hard struggle, but it's not just the SBGB which is going to do this, or is doing it. But as for changing attitudes, even within capitalism, people's attitudes are changing a lot, and have changed a lot. People's attitudes towards many questions. Take unemployment. There was a time, I remember, when we used to stand at meetings, and a short while ago, a year or two ago, and if you speak about unemployment, people are rushing at you and saying, it's the workers, they're too lazy. It serves them right. But you watch unemployment rise to 3 million, and see if you hear a whisper about that. You don't. So as the conditions get worse, and as the conditions change, people's ideas begin to change, without us even lifting a finger. What we're trying to do is to channel that in a certain direction. To say to people, okay, you're dissatisfied with this, you're dissatisfied with that. Now, come on, you can see there's a common link. That's all we're saying.
So I agree that the SBGB have their role is to identify the reason why we have all these problems, which is capitalist society. But you can only do that in a democratic country. Obviously, in an undemocratic country where there's a single party state, such as Russia, or where there's a lot of a police state, where there's no freedom of speech, there's no immediate hope that this ever being discussed, even, well, probably between half a dozen people in a room, but that's about it, no public meetings. Well, in this country, you're allowed to have a whole of public meetings, such as now, and find out the reasons for the problems, which you've done tonight. But this is a democratic country. A lot of countries in this world today are undemocratic, no freedom of speech, and when will the time ever come when the majority of countries in the world are democratic enough to begin to understand the reason for the problems?
Can I say something first? The gentleman said that we are a democratic country and that talk with Russia as a one-party state. Well, I would call this country a one-party state because you have no object but to elect the capitalist government.
It's a bit of a bit. You wouldn't be allowed to hold a public meeting in Russia.
You know, this speaker, to comment on what the first speaker said, first of all, we'll go into it.
Yeah. Well, on the point of the state dictatorships, which have obviously got a long way to go, which haven't, the workers in them haven't yet won the kind of democratic rights which we have actually won here in the terms of being able to run a meeting. I was watching a programme the other day about the Polish question, and one of the economists there, he said, the trouble is, these Polish workers are learning about Marx in school, and they're telling them about Marx, and they're trying to distort Marx, obviously. I mean, he didn't say all this, I'm adding a bit to it, but you know, they're trying to use Marx to justify what's happening in Poland, which is hard to do because Marx didn't support state dictatorship. But he said, the trouble is they're learning that in school about pure socialism, and they want pure socialism. You know, he said they grow up in Polish country, and they find that they're having to work for a wage like we do, and they're having to face unemployment, and they're having to face long queues, and they can't get what they want. And they say, this isn't socialism. We want the real thing. We have learned about the textbooks. So that's a hopeful sign. And obviously, you have to make allowances for differences in words. So I mean, some Polish workers may turn around and say, if that's socialism, forget it. Well, fair enough, they're using the word socialism to describe the state dictatorship they've got. Well, that doesn't really matter. But basically, they realise there's something better. Another young trade unionist, I think, said on that programme, or a writer, in fact, said on that programme, what we really need in Poland, she was Polish, is not capitalism, she said that we want something which is not neither capitalism nor what we've got here, which they call socialism, you know. So some of these ideas are filtering through. I understand from some of the North East branch comrades here before the meeting that there's some contact actually has gone in Poland and setting the socialist standard there. So it just shows you that even now the turmoil is beginning to break out in Poland, that changes can be won there. And as the world grows in its communications, and as the world market expands, so that it's contracting at the moment, but I mean as participation in the world market grows, the different countries sell their goods to one another on the world market, there's a lot more international communication. The workers find out much more about each other in different countries. And finally, on the question of democratic rights, you say how much longer would it take for them to be able to have public meetings? I think there are two points to make on that. Firstly, never mind how long it takes them to run public meetings. We've got a public meeting here, and we should be working on this. Obviously, if we've got in 20 people now, we need 50 people, and then we need 500 people. Having got the right to hold the meeting, we must say, why the hell haven't people bothered to go to it? They're all sitting at home complaining about Russia, where you have no free speech, no free rights. But they don't make use of it here. That's a bigger problem in a way. And the second point I think you have to make about it is that, obviously, we didn't always have this here. 100 years ago, or 200 years ago, we weren't allowed to hold a public meeting. And it was only after long struggles, which I'm sure you all know about, as much as I do, that this kind of democratic right was won. So it's not a static thing. You haven't just got them over there permanently being oppressed without having free speech. These things can be won through struggling. And I feel very confident that the workers in Russia and in Poland and in Hungary are in the process of doing that, very slowly, and perhaps groping even more in the dark than we are, maybe. But all the same, they're doing it, and as I say originally, responding to conditions all the time, which are forcing them to look for an answer.
I'd like to take up on the Poland thing. I mean, it seems to contradict to your basic thesis. One is that the Polish workers are extremely nationalistic, and you're an ex-nationalist. The other is that they're extremely religious, and the Catholicism and nationalism in Poland don't go hand in hand. So I don't see that it really helps your analysis.
Well, I hope I didn't give that impression. Obviously, this party opposes the nationalism and the religion of the Polish workers as such. And we think that their nationalism and their Catholicism is holding them back in the same way that nationalism and religion are holding people back here. We fully expose that. But at the same time, all we're saying is, despite their nationalism, despite their Catholicism, at least they're trying to do something. At least they've made a start. Now, I'm only trying to point to that as an example to our friend here, who has a very dark view of it and says that how will they ever escape from that? I'm simply saying, okay, they've got great problems on their hands, just as we have. But don't imagine that they're simply sitting there doing nothing about it. They are trying gradually and taking steps in the right direction to actually have a conscious control themselves over their own lives.
But they find all their motivation in their nationalism and their Catholicism.
Yeah, it's true. And on this programme I mentioned, there was the ironic situation where the workers were invoking religion, invoking God, and saying, with God we will defeat our bosses. And the party bosses, on the other hand, were saying, oh, never mind religion, you should be atheists, which is in fact the opposite of what you've often had here, where workers have in fact been materialists and atheists, and where the bosses have said you must turn to religion. And it shows it can work both ways. But I rather suspect that for some of the Communist Party officials, atheism is a religion. But as for the Catholicism of the Polish workers, as I've said, we do oppose that. But it doesn't alter the fact that they are. It's quite possible for them to dissociate themselves from that. I mean, the fact that the Polish workers have as an inspiration Catholicism doesn't change the fact that they are trying to do something about their conditions. Now, what you seem to be implying is that if you take away their religion, as we would have it, they'll be stuck. Well, obviously they won't. As time goes on, if they are able to reject the superstition, if they reject the Pope, the Vatican, and if they reject all religion, all religious ideas, that doesn't mean they're going to be stuck at all. It will give them even greater strength. If I can make one other point whilst I'm on this, because it is quite interesting, I think, that they showed you a crowd of workers in Poland, and they said that when these workers in Poland made their demands felt, their numbers and their militancy were unanswerable. There's nothing the Polish Communist Party chiefs could do. There were so many of them and they were so determined. But there's one point, they still followed the leader, to some extent, most of them, of Lech Walesa. But the point about that is if they didn't follow a leader, if every single one of them thought for themselves and was in fact their own leader, how much stronger would they be? Nothing at all could hold it back as a revolution to actually institute a system of common democratic control. So on that point, which I don't think I've fully answered earlier, of leadership, to say that people will always have to follow leaders, what it is at the moment which is making people have leaders is their own lack of ideas on the subject, that they are being followers, sheep. So never mind about the leaders, forget them for the moment, let's focus on what the people themselves are. If people are still sheep and they are looking for a leader, the answer is to look for something which is more tangible in its place. So in responding to those problems and those conditions, rather than seeing the leader as the solution, what we've got to do is actually displace that and actually see a solution which we can put in our own hands.
Well, isn't the fact that...
Gordon, could I just...
Well, how many times?
Gordon, just before you came on the same point, could I ask if there's anybody else who wants to bring up another point? Because I think he's dealt with the point. Yeah?
I'm just wondering what the Socialist Party that you are condemning conditioning before, but surely a lot of what you're asking sort of like the members of this party and the non-members who are present tonight is to ask them to go out tonight and condition them to your way of thinking. Now, is that your, are you saying that you're condemning condition? Or are you just saying you're condemning condition who doesn't agree with you? Because you are asking for people, surely to live in a social state, everybody must be in a mental state that they accept socialism. So you're going to have to condition people to that mental state. Therefore, how do you do that? And at the same time as you were before, condemning this system whereby you condition people.
Well, the difference is, the difference between capitalist conditioning and what we are actually trying to advocate is that we don't ask you to believe us. And we don't ask you to join. In fact, we wouldn't probably even let you join tonight because we wouldn't feel sure that you were totally in agreement with us. If you read the Socialist Standard, we don't actually expect you to read it and instantly believe every word of it and come and repeat it parrot fashion. All we're saying is we're asking people to open their eyes and think for themselves. That's all we can say. That is essentially our message, that people should think for themselves and should look around and respond to their conditions in a realistic way. Now, I would say the difference between what we are saying, you call it conditioning if you like, and what is in fact false conditioning or distortion, is that what you hear from the press and the media and the radio and everything is a distortion. You can actually, we can point out quite accurately why it is a distortion. If somebody comes on and says, there's not enough food in the world to go around, that is conditioning.
I'm fully aware that.
Right, so that is a distortion. All we're saying is we're coming along and we're saying, okay, that's conditioning. Now, ask yourself the question, is there enough food to go around? Go and look for yourself. Go and read the reports of the United Nations, which say the opposite. You know, there's this ironic situation where the capitalist bodies themselves say two things at once. The United Nations says there's enough to feed three times the present population. But all of the official papers and things seem to ignore that half the time and just assume that there's not enough to go around. So always, it's not conditioning, we're just saying, look at the contradictions for yourself and you work it out. On the second point about a socialist society, when a socialist revolution has taken place, as far as I'm concerned, and this is possibly a fairly personal view, I don't think that the concept of socialism will exist for much longer. In other words, we only need this whole talk about socialism and capitalism right now to work the thing out. If we got a socialist society, there'd be no need to talk about socialism or capitalism or hardly any other ism. You know, except for historical purposes maybe, or for some other further advance. But the point is, a socialist society is one, by definition, in which people control their own society. Total democracy. Common control of all resources and decisions and everything else. No hierarchy of us and them or authority. And therefore, I don't think people have to go around like robots or with a certain mental state. The only mental state they'll need is to be clear-headed, which doesn't have to be inculcated, it just has to be lived and experienced as a result of your own life.
Can I just throw something in here? Yeah. Just a small thing. You were saying before, like, you give an example of, like, I want to be an engine driver and that. And I'm obviously, one of the ideas that you have is to use people to their abilities. Now, I'm just wondering, if everybody didn't want to work in a social state, what happens? Collapses? Or do we then try to create some form of control? I mean, there are people that will not wish to work, I assume, or will not actually believe in the socialist form. So what do you do with that kind of people? How do the socialist idea deal with those people?
Yes, if there are people who didn't want to work in socialism, the short answer is one of the two things you said. Either yes, it would collapse, or they would be encouraged to work. But that's just a short answer. The real answer is, in fact, neither one nor the other, because socialism cannot exist until there is a majority of people who do want to work for a sensible society and that kind. So that is the precondition. If there's a majority of people who are ready to establish socialism, it will happen. If there aren't, it won't. We have reason to believe that is on the way to being realised. And it's only when a majority want it that it can actually be brought about by taking over the state forces and transforming society directly to have a society of that kind. If within that society somebody for some reason doesn't want to work, and it's biologically and socially very unlikely that they want to do nothing. But if somebody can find nothing helpful to do, is a total parasite biologically in some way, they could be accommodated, I think. There'd be so few people of that description that society should be able to handle it. But I think the thing to remember is that socialism is a society. And I stress that because at the moment, this life hardly deserves the name of society because we're all fighting against each other. Socialism is a real society where people work together, pull together. If somebody's a bit awkward and they drop out, well, there's going to be no police force or coshes or guns to get at them. The most they may suffer is being sent to Coventry. And having just passed through Coventry on the way up here almost, I tell you that's something which we wouldn't want to happen to. But that's the most that they will suffer. There'll be no need to force them. But basically it will be a social body, so we make democratic decisions. And there will be social decisions to make, because obviously if you have to decide whether or not to build a motorway through here, it's not one man's decision. It is very often nowadays, because the man with the power. But in society, it shouldn't be one man's decision. You pull together, who will do what? You do that, okay, I'll do this, and we'll have the motorway, or we won't, or whatever.
Could I suggest putting a question back in our comrades' court and say that you're not a socialist, and you had the choice between a socialist system of society and a capitalist system of society. Would you work for socialism? Knowing what you've got to live your own head?
I prefer to work for a society where all people are all willing to work.
Right, now can I hear you there?
However, I disbelieve that there is a society where all people will be willing
to work. Okay, come on. Now, if we threw that around the room, I would say there wouldn't be one person in this room that wouldn't work for a sensible system of society. Not one.
Okay? I work for a sensible
system. Why is it all somewhat like
that? Yes.
Why is it all somewhat like that? There will not be one person in this room. But wouldn't work for a sensible system of society.
I think there's been a point that we've
You say we're going on a bit about foundation. I think everybody here at some time believed in Santa Claus.
Would anybody else like to ask a question?
Well, I'd like to ask it to the doctor, because the examples you've given about growing things don't really seem to me to get to the nub of the problem, because the nub of the problem is power. Now, it seems to me that in that sense you're extremely romantic. In fact, you do actually remind me of lots of religious people in the past. Instance, the liberal Christians of America in the 1920s who believed that by preaching love and goodwill you could actually transform society. Now, how do you answer that? You see, I mean, you don't really give me an analysis of how you're going to get there. What you just talk about bringing it in democratically. There's no evidence that is going to happen as far as I can see in the examples that you've given.
I agree with you that power is the main key problem, and I think that the driving force at the moment in society and right through history is a power struggle, because the struggle between classes I did talk about is in fact, of course, a power struggle. It's a struggle over power, over resources and within society, and I agree with that. But you say I didn't give any indication of how it would come about. I think I did, but at the risk of repeating myself, I'll clarify. I think that the way in which socialism will come about is by this power struggle reaching such a stage where the only way forward is in fact for the majority of society to take power. Now at the moment, I think you'd agree that most of us are comparatively powerless. Obviously within small personal situations, one person may have power over another. But when you talk about real power over the things that matter in society, power over vast amounts of resources, over things as potentially destructive as atom bombs, the power that really matters, it's in the hands of so few people. So I agree with you, power is the thing, and socialism comes about when the majority of people say this situation is intolerable any longer, and we are going to take that power into our own hands, to control society, to have power over our own destiny. Does that answer your question?
Well, you just then jump to a society where everybody's transformed, you've got a transformed human nature. I suppose I would just basically disagree with you that all the problems of human nature are simply bound up with capitalism. I don't really believe that. I mean, I believe that capitalism does manifest plenty of evils, but I don't really believe that that is the sole source of the problem. And I can't really see that by jumping from one to another, you're certainly going to end up in a society where everybody is transformed.
Well, I didn't say that. Look, the whole of history is in fact a history of the transformation of human nature. As if by human nature you mean the way people behave, the way people relate to one another. History means that is changing all the time. And not just the way people relate, but everything else about you, your human nature. Obviously, biological things, such as being able to stand or walk or needing to eat, don't change, and that's no problem, we can cope with that. But other problematic features of your human nature are constantly changing. Your problems, mental problems of human nature, are very different from those of somebody 100 years ago, because of the changing conditions in society. Now, I haven't said that it's going to be overnight, and I haven't said this is a sudden transformation of human nature. Far from it. It's a great struggle. And it doesn't need people to be utterly transformed in terms of their mental makeup. It needs the kind of transformation where people are prepared to think rationally in their own interests. And are prepared, as a friend over there said, he's prepared to work where everybody else is prepared to work, in a sensible society. Now, at the moment, there's a small group, about 10% of the population, who are not prepared to work. They're not the unemployed, they're people who possess the entire resources of society, who employ the rest of us. So, once you've got a society where everyone's working effectively, where everyone does their bit, then your question of human nature is just a red herring, because human nature will take its course, will develop accordingly. Now, I agree that after generations of living in a society of common ownership, no money, no tickets, the kind of differences it makes you could think about all night, and that in itself would transform human nature, because children would no longer be dependent upon their parents financially. You'd no longer be able to blackmail innocent, naive and helpless young children by saying to them that you're forbidden to do whatever it is, and you're forbidden to think whatever it is, and you're forbidden to say whatever it is, and if you don't like it, well, you know, you can starve. That dependency will be destroyed. So each of us will instead be dependent upon the whole of society. Every child will be answerable, not just to one parent, but to the whole of society for its food. Will be able to go out freely and take what food it needs from society, take what education it needs from society. Anything here with socialism, we're actually saying we're going to do it, we've got the will to do it. And I don't think that's being romantic. Obviously, it involves a certain amount of vision, simply for us to sit here and say, right, we're going to create a new society. And it's been done before, and it'll be done again.
Anybody else make a
question? Just a point to make about the question, with regard to human nature. People that put this point forward often, I believe, is putting forward the not so much in human nature, it's the point of human behaviour, not human nature. I think human nature is, you know, each, as you said before, each leaves propagating whatever. Human behaviour is something completely different, and as far as I'm concerned, or aware, human behaviour is controlled by your economic environment.
Anybody else
may
ask a question?
I'll comment on what's already been said.
Well, at the risk of going back to what I was up about before. At the risk of going back to the same subject I was on. I think you covered it pretty well, it was about leaders again.
Yeah.
Well,
I've changed my mind, and I've stuck up for a question.
Well,
convince others what is similar now. Right, well, if there's any questions, I'll try and cover that point if I can, but I only want to say briefly then. But the main question facing us, I think, now, and there seems to be some agreement, at least on the kind of points that have been covered, is what kind of action we take. Perhaps we can just, I'll just cover that for a couple of minutes to end off the meeting. There are a couple of things I didn't get around to here which are interesting on that subject. People are aware of the problem in great numbers, but to be fully aware of the problem, it involves knowing what to do about it. And just an interesting example of this is this book, which you probably may have seen. And it points out some of the, if you read it, it points out some of the horrific facts of 21 children die every minute and all the rest of it. And it makes a very emotional appeal, a very moral kind of appeal, because a lot of that kind of starvation may not affect people industrialised country, we may have problems of a different kind. But having made this appeal, it says hunger is not inevitable, which of course we agree with, because the food is there, it's just being destroyed in the name of profit. And the very odd thing about this booklet is that it says what's missing, hunger persists because we can end it and we haven't, but it doesn't anywhere say how you can. It just keeps repeating, read on, you make the difference, you can do it. But there's no connection of what you actually have to do. Now, I'd say that's a bit of a shot in the dark. It's a reasonable pamphlet, it's got some interesting material in it, but it's total vacuum, that you don't know what to do. Another example here from the Guildford United Nations Association and Guildford Council of Churches, highly revolutionary body, which points out that between 1960 and 1980, world expenditure on armaments quadrupled. And that's an indication of the increasing militarism that I refer to. And it says it's about £1 million a minute a day. What do you do about it? There's a list, but I'll just tell you a couple of them. Think about these thoughts above. Give more time, thought and prayer to the issues of peace and war. In other words, carry on what priests and their followers have been doing for hundreds and thousands of years, either in favour of war or against war. Say something encouraging to the people organising the peace stall or any other of the activities mentioned on this page. They get in need of a boost sometimes. Okay, and write to your MP. But obviously it's pathetic the kind of solutions they're looking for, and I'm not surprised knowing Guildford Council of Churches. But these are just examples of the kind of desperation that's facing us. And I do think the point I drew your attention to at the beginning about crisis is an extremely important one. Because this isn't just, we're not just talking about capitalism in its early form, hundreds of years ago, when the old merchants were saying, we must get rid of these medieval shackles, we must have a modern commercial system of expansion and navigation. We haven't got that anymore. It's expanded so much that it's like a rotten apple, and therefore we're in a state of extreme crisis where you have increasing unemployment, increasing militarism, and as I said, it is shifting people into two camps. What do you do? Do you become totally despairing, become fascist in fact, as this Daily Mail letter implies, and you say, rioting, destroy them, kill them. If somebody's discontented, shoot them. Try and hide, sweep it under the carpet. Or do you take the opposite extreme and actually say the way to solve the problem is to end it right from the roots, which is revolutionary. It doesn't involve the kind of blood and barricades revolution of the last century, because those were the revolutions which brought the capitalist system into being. As far as socialism is concerned, it needs mass understanding, real democratic participation. And when you have a majority of people in favour of that, it's not barricades you need, it's actually just you've got what you need. You've got the mass understanding, which itself means socialism. And in the face of that kind of numbers and militancy, as they said in this thing on Poland, there's nothing that a small minority can do, because we're doing all their dirty work for them at the moment, killing each other and firing the guns and the bombs. But once we've actually agreed amongst ourselves to reject that, the job has been done. So I'll just ask you to keep in touch with the North East branch of the Socialist Party of Great Britain, which is in fact based in Seaham. There's plenty of literature there. And if you do nothing else this evening, at least think about what I've said, and at least have a look at some of that literature. And as I said, we're not trying to condition you. We're just saying, give it a good think, and you work it out for yourself. We think if you do really work it out for yourself, there's a good chance of you coming to join us to actually fight for the only world which is worth living for.